Peak session number 10420, rule 55.
Colonel W.I. Watson, rail 55. Will you go on with your description of your work
yes,
now, Colonel?
I went to the Yorkshire Hussars and I found them in a very depressed atmosphere because they'd never been into battle. And they'd accumulated vast quantities of stores and sporting equipment which they could never have carried around with them had they been sent into, had to undertake any battle operations. Now, there were there in the regiment quite a number of people that I actually knew from here. There was the adjutant, who was a chap called Harrison, who worked in Barclays Bank in Darlington, and his father was a very well-known shorthand breeder at Gainford Hall Farm. He was the adjutant. There was Lord Zetland, the present Lord Zetland, who was a troop commander. And also there was Jerry Wilson, who was now dead, and he lived at Cliff Hall at Piercebridge. And, of course, there was Lord Feversham, Sim Feversham, who I'd been on a course with earlier on in, when we first went out there and had many social evenings together. And while I was there, Anthony Eden, too, came to see the regiment, and Feversham said to Anthony Eden, "This is Colonel Watson of the Durham Light Infantry who has just come back from fighting in Sicily." And Anthony Eden poked me in the chest and said, "Yes, Black Buttons, Bishop Auckland." And he said, "My father and I saw your battalion off at the central station at Newcastle in April 1915. And I said, "Yes," and my father was commanding the battalion at the time. Now, the reason his father would be seeing the battalion off, he had in fact been the Sir William Eden, his father had in fact been the CO round about 1899, 1900, at the very beginning of the century, and he was the honorary colonel in 1915. And it struck me that a remarkable memory some of these politicians have. Yes, Black Buttons, Bishop Auckland. I'd never forget it. I mean, I see him now pressing me in the chest. Anyhow, subsequently, Sim Feversham said to me, "Well, you better pipe down, we're going home." So I stopped. And almost the very next day, I was warned that I was to give this job up, and I was to be a G1 of number 2, I think it was, GHQ training team in Palestine. Now, a training team consisted of a G1, a lieutenant colonel's appointment, a G2, who would be a major, and there would be a clerk and drivers, and you had a 1,500 weight truck, an 800 weight truck, and a jeep. And you drove round to do all sorts of things. Umpire, set exercises, direct exercises, visit battalions to see what sort of state their training was in, and that sort of thing, and write reports. Send them in to wherever, to higher authority. Well, I was to go and take them over number 2 GHQ training team in Palestine for the 9th Army. I think that the training team there had been a very much of a stooge training team, but the 9th Army were comprised all the troops in Palestine, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. And it was there I had to go and work with the 9th Army. But I took the opportunity before going there once more to tackle the military secretary about getting home. and he wasn't very hopeful. Mind it, but in this country there was a pool of lieutenant colonels of about 120, so it wasn't much chance of getting a job here. And majors were pool of majors without jobs to do, with I don't know how many, but far, far more. Anyhow, I set off at the end of October, and I took over the team, and we went to the 9th Army headquarters, and there was an exercise going on which lasted for about 9 days at the end of October called Exercise Virile, and it had its control headquarters in the Austrian hospice at Nazareth. And I remember one evening sitting outside the hospice overlooking Nazareth, looking out toward the sun setting in the west, and I was talking to a chap called Colonel Dolly Tilney and the famous Club Pasha. I remember sitting there talking to him. And this exercise, Virile, was for the benefit of all the troops in the 9th Army, Greeks, Gurkhas, Lebanese, Transjordan Frontier Force, Arab Legion from Transjordan, the Poles, the British, and the Free French, which included Senegalese. I had to act as a sort of umpire, one of many umpire, and then write a report on that. And that was one of the first jobs I had to do for the 9th Army. That took some time. It didn't finish till the end of October, but about in the first week of November, I was told to move my team to help the Poles. And I went to join the 3rd Carpathian Division of the Polish Army under General Duch. And he could speak English, but didn't like doing so because he thought his English wasn't very good. However, he was an extraordinary nice character. He actually fought in the White Sea Archangel operation after the First World War in North Russia. And he had the Military Cross, and he told me that he had marched down Princes Street with a white polar bear. Well, the 3rd Carpathian Division did, in fact, have a brigade in Tobruk in the desert, and they were rather hoity-toity to a certain degree. Anyhow, I reported to the British liaison unit. There was a full-time British liaison unit with this Polish corps. There were two divisions, and I came to the conclusion they all wanted kicking, and they'd been too long in their jobs, stagnating there. And we lived in the mess of the liaison unit, but we fed with the Poles. And oh dear, the food was horrible, so oily, vegetables, and really complete cauliflower heads, and oh goodness me, and oily, and then for pudding you merely had a piece of cake. Well, may you ask, what did I do? Well, I had to tell them about battle experience, and I had to give them lectures and hints and watch their exercise. And I was always told to blow my own trumpet. You had to blow your own trumpet. And the sort of thing you had to say to them, now make sure all your chaps are wearing, carrying their identity discs around their neck, because if you don't, you will see a whole lot of graves with to the memory of an unknown Polish soldier. Well, that's the sort of thing one had to tell them. They were very much concerned with a visit, forthcoming visit, of General Anders. Now, General Anders was the commander-in-chief of the whole of the Polish army from England, and he succeeded General Sikorski, who crashed in Gibraltar. And so they were much concerned with his visit. Although they did a certain amount of training, and they listened to my lectures, were far more concerned on the turnout for and the social arrangements for General Anders' visit. I always remember the A and Q of the division, who could speak pretty good English. I asked him how he learnt English. "Oh," he said, "I learnt English. I used to read the Australian papers in Tobruk, and then I went for so many months, I can't remember now how many months or how many weeks, and lived with a young lady in Alexandria." That's how he learnt his English. But on the whole, I found the Carpathian division a bit stiff. They thought themselves rather the cat's whiskers. Now, General Anders came, we had any number of parades, and I did dine with the senior officers of the Corps on a sort of state dinner they gave him in a hut in the camp in Palestine. I sat next to the Brigadier Way on one side of him. He was the head of the British liaison unit, and he was sitting next to Anders, and then there was Brigadier Way, then there was myself, and then there was an assistant liaison officer who was a Pole, of course, the Corps liaison officer, who was in the Polish RAF, or the Polish Air Force. And he was an extraordinarily pleasant chap, and could talk about all sorts of subjects. And of course, we had a Slav orchestra playing, and he was obviously very musical, and he told me all about what the tunes and where they came from, and all about the music that was being played at the meal. Now, when it was all over, we all split up and went to little tables, and the doors of the hut opened, and a whole lot of female ats came in. They were called peskis, and they sang songs, and of course they were right top-notch characters from the stage in Krakow and Paris. You see, all these Poles, bar the brigade that had been in Tobruk, they'd all been released by the Russians and come through Russia and into Persia and into the Middle East. Now, they were called peskis, because some of the officers told me, you know, they're called peskis. And why is an at like a melon? Because pesky means the same as a seed in a melon. And the girls didn't like it at all. But there was one very attractive girl came and sat at one or two at my table, and we had a long talk. Well, then I was then sent to the 5th Border Division of the Polish Army, and this was a completely different setup. They had no heirs at all, and they were commanded by General Sulik, who I remember him saying to me, or one of his staff saying to me, perhaps it was the G1 or something, saying, "Well, you're here now, so you still have to stay with the bloody Poles." I mean, that was the atmosphere you got when you went to the 5th Carpathian Division. And I was very sorry, really, to leave when I had to leave. However, the stay there was interrupted. Once more, there was another interruption. And from the 25th of November, to the 2nd of December, I went with my team to the School of Mountain Warfare up high up in the mountains of Lebanon. Very like Switzerland, that you see it in the end of November, beginning of December. There was snow on the top, and it really was beautiful surroundings to look down down from the mountains down into the low country. And the first person I met there was my old carrier platoon commander, Freddie Cole, who had been wounded in the Gazala line. And he looked after me extremely well. And he told me that he had bribed the doctor so that he could jump out of an aeroplane. And I said to him, "Oh, Freddie, for God's sake, be careful. Don't go and do anything foolish, because you were badly wounded." But he did jump out of an aeroplane. He was the administrative officer for Fitzroy McLean and jumped, eventually jumped out into Yugoslavia. But while I was there, I couldn't have been looked after better by my former carrier platoon commander. I always remember the commandant was a chap called Brigadier Moffat, who was had a great sense of humour. And he was obviously liked by all the country, the Maronites who live up in the mountains of Lebanon. And I remember him telling me one day that he'd been for a walk one Sunday afternoon in the mountains and met a Maronite woman who was obviously going to have a baby. And she had a very pale, very good-looking boy by her side, young boy by her side. And he said to this woman, "That's a very nice baby you've got, a very nice boy you've got there by the side of you." "Yes," she said, "good boy, very good boy, Australian boy." And she was obviously going to have a baby, so he said to her, "What's that in the oven?" And she said in reply to him, "Bad boy, Arab boy, no good, no good at all." But he had a rare sense of humour, old Brigadier Moffat, and of course, by the time I left Paris, the Middle East, his school was all finished. We went to watch, when we were there, demonstrations on how to load mules. You know, if you load a camel up or a mule up, you've got to put the loads on either side of them at the same time. You can't put one on one side and then go around, put another on the other side. And that was one of the things that we had to learn because I remember something went wrong. There were some Indians demonstrating loading the mule, and something went wrong with the mules, and two went off like racehorses with their ammunition box, banging, bang, bang, one side of them in the middle of this big demonstration. Incidentally, the Indian mules, the very big Indian mules, and they had some there, could carry two wounded chaps on either side, on stretchers. And so we saw that too. But the scenery was so wonderful. Now, close to, no distance away, in a ring fence, at a distance they looked tiny, tiny, tiny little trees. But they were elephantine cedars of Lebanon, and they were the only ones of the cedars left. The whole mountainside had originally been cedars, but these huge elephantine cedars were all that was left of the original cedars. Anyhow, after that was all over, I went back to the Poles, and I got a tremendous welcome back. And I was then, I think when I left the Poles, I said to the old general one day, we never want an invasion to do. I don't want to ever do a thing like of the invasion of Sicily, and he said, no, no, don't you worry, you're coming with me. But I wasn't allowed to go with them. Of course, after they'd gone and gone to Italy, they were took a tremendous part in the Battle of Monte Cassino, and they were the Poles that I'd been living with. Well, beginning of December, I went to a place called Sarafand in in Palestine. I can't remember now why I went there, but anyhow, I met Claude Lincoln, who'd been our brigade major, and he said, "What the hell are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, may you ask?" He said, "But you were to take all the rare details of the 50th Division home, the general told me, and to take all, and what are you doing here?" Well, it made me very depressed, because I knew somewhere somebody had made a horrible mess up, and I couldn't get home. Anyhow, I was then warned to go to GHQ, not with my team. I was to go by myself to GHQ in Cairo, and I gave my last lecture to the Poles, and I was really very, very sorry to leave them, and they were really sorry that I should go. And I went out to GHQ, and then I was told to take over the infantry school. Now, the infantry school was a sort of training establishment attached to the infantry training depot. Well, the infantry training depot was really the slough of despond. You abandoned all hope if you got there. If you were a sick man or there was nothing for you to do to the infantry training depot, you went. Now, the infantry school was part of this, the ITD, and I reported to General Brigadier Fairbank at GHQ, who told me that the commandant was an extremely unpleasant man. And I incidentally at the same time gave him a report on what I'd written about the Poles. And I was therefore second in command of the ITD and the infantry school. It really was a desperate place. Quite clearly, the infantry school, which was 6 miles from the ITD, ought to be an establishment on its own. Most of the staff were green jackets. There was an awful, depressed atmosphere about it, because what could you do training somebody on a large slice of the desert near the canal, when there was no fighting anywhere in the Middle East? It was all in Italy, and altogether it was a very depressing place. And it had subsidiary schools all the way round. It had a signal school, weapon training school, and it had a MT school, maintenance sort of workshops, teach them how to do that, and it had a battle school and a mines and all that, all that went around this vast area of desert. And it also had a car park full of German and Italian weapons, which were really frightfully dull and uninteresting. And it also had a museum of mines, so you could see all the different kinds of mines, but hopelessly out of date. I mean, we'd had seen more modern mines at Marath than what was on this place, in this place. However, to cheer me up, I used to walk around the whole of the schools in the morning, and to cheer me up, however, the adjutant rang me up from one school and said, "Your brother's here to see you." I said, "Quite nonsense." And he said, "Well, he is, and he looks rather like it." And it was my brother who had left Uganda and joined the East African Pioneer Corps, and he knew I was here, And he did come and see me, and he spent a weekend with me there. Anyhow, it was a very depressing, and I found the commandant an extremely wretched little man. And I was determined that I was going to get this place split from the ITD. We ran courses for various units, battle, weapon training and all that sort of thing, and the students weren't turning up. We were told so many would come, and then only about half the number would come. And it was most depressing, and it was a sort of make the best of a bad job or something like that. Anyhow, I then, in the beginning of the new year, 44, I started to really smarten, try and get this place smartened up. A new commandant arrived. I got the food arrangements better. I went to the students' mess, and I insisted that everything had to be clean. And I was told that the new commandant, who was a captain called Colonel Stevenson, came from the Dorset sub-area straight to the Middle East training, the Middle East training depot, to the depot. Well, I thought he couldn't be much good.